I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And I'm Daniel Zamparelli.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and stuff.
Welcome to episode 29 of Can't Lit.
Oh, remember when you were 29 a couple months ago?
Oh my God,
yeah.
That
was so cute. It was so adorable.
Oh, being 30 now, everything's terrible. That's not true, actually. Everything's really nice now that I'm 30.
Did everything just get better magically?
Yeah, kind of.
No, was it your outlook?
I had like a civil conversation with like my ex, and I was like, "Oh, I guess this is what 30 is like."
Must be 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you haven't like.
I still want to gouge his eyes out. I'm just kidding.
Boils and stuff that happen. You haven't really achieved.
Oh, I've got eczema.
But yeah, but you had that when you were in your 20s.
That's true.
The boils. You become more witch-like every day.
The dirty 30s.
When you turn into your get
yeah,
30s.
It just gets gross.
Also, today, we have a very special guest who has already been saying so many wonderful things. Carly Baker. Hi, Carly.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
To
Carly's fresh off the boat, a.k.a. the ferry.
Yeah.
From Galliano Island.
Yes.
And this is our special Can't Lit Bowl.
We're recording this and several other episodes today when the Super Bowl is happening, because who cares? So we do have a lot of snacks in bowls, which is why it's the Can't Lit Bowl, because we're serving food in bowls.
Yeah. So hopefully we make a lot of gross mouth noises this entire episode.
And there's a lot of crunchy items, chips, dips, lots of dips, tiny, delicious M&Ms. Carly brought these beautiful macaroons. I can't believe I haven't even eaten them yet.
That's
someone
like
me.
Actually quite shocking, yeah.
They're going to be really crunchy into the mic.
I'm definitely going to eat one when someone's saying something really sincere and important.
Yeah.
Like, that's beautiful.
We were just, before recording, all admitted that we were hungover, but I want to find out, Carly, what's happening?
Yeah, well, yeah, as Dina said, I am fresh off the boat. I moved to Galliano Island, spent 5 months there, just... really, really couldn't handle the solitude. People romanticize it, and especially writer types for sure. It's just like, oh, I just love to be by myself. And yeah, it's great to be by yourself, but this was a lot of by myself. So after 5 months, I decided that I needed to be back surrounded by the city buzz and the city lights. There's also no infrastructure there. Mm-hmm. You walk home, in the dark. And just the stuff that I kind of thought, I sort of told myself in my romantic mind that I would get used to, and I never did. So here I am, I'm back, and I'm really happy to be back.
That's good.
No, welcome back.
Welcome back. We're happy to have you back. I have never romanticized that life ever. Like, as a true extrovert and a person who loves infrastructure and also grew up in a small town and like did have to walk home in the dark and stuff already. Like, I'm like, that's cool. I already did that. When people, writers get excited about moving to a small town and starting over, I'm like, do you love racists and rednecks? I'm not saying everyone there is, but you're going to encounter way more of it. I hope you're cool with that.
Yeah.
Like, your idea of the people drinking out of artisanal everything out of their art, like, that's not what it's going to be like
for
you. No. Just so you know, there's a lot of snow machines.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that romantic and cool.
Nope.
I know lots of people from where I grew up who are wonderful and are totally cool and great, and I think they're lovable, but there's also, I mean, people live there for that culture too.
Yeah.
The culture of shittiness.
Yeah.
Hi, small town Canada. I know you hate me. Bye. We love you. We have a love-hate relationship with you.
I always romanticized it just because, like, yeah, I do like the idea of a small town and, like, getting to like renovate a nice small home that I can afford, all those things. But then I always like am reminded whenever I go to small towns, I was like, oh yeah, it's like crazy homophobic here. And
yeah,
it's like, I tried to raise kids with a husband here. They would not be chill.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, okay. So like I can romanticize like Victoria.
And the small towns that are chill are way more expensive. Like have to pay more to be in a cool small town where people are nice.
Galliano, I feel, is probably more open-minded.
Oh, it's way more chill.
Yeah, yeah.
It's totally, the island and island life is totally different from like other small town.
I graduated high school in Lillooet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Holy racist.
So you were like in Lillooet in the 80s?
Yeah.
90s.
90s. Yeah. The whole 90s was in Lillooet. And that was like, yeah.
So where were you before that?
Cassiar, which is just 2 hours south of the Yukon border.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we did isolation a lot. I don't know why I didn't get it on my... Well, that's clearly it's out of my system now, and I'm ready to be a city gal. For sure.
You can listen to this also to remind yourself if you start to get like weird about it.
That happens too. Different times of the year, you're feeling differently about stuff, and all of a sudden, this is not seeming like a good idea. I moved there in the summer, and that is a bit... I mean, and the people warned me. People said it's going to be different here in the winter, and I'm so arrogant about that. I'm like, oh, yeah? I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
You tell me who I am? No, uh-uh. And yeah, no, people were totally right.
Yeah. Damn. What else is going on? What have you been up to since you've returned?
Yeah. Okay. Well, back writing, working on myself, cause that kind of slowed down a little bit too. And when I just really, knew I needed to leave. So I'm working on end of this month is, the Peel Project, which is a documentary that I took part in. Myself and five other artists paddled 500 kilometers through the Yukon and Northwest Territories just over a year ago. And it was brutal. That's going to be, I feel like brutal is going to be sort of the theme for me, this podcast. I wrote, while I was there, I wrote some poems, and afterwards I've been working on a memoir. So I'm back working on that. It's going to be a massive project because I basically want to write about, I want to write about our experience there, which from my perspective was what a naive dumbass I am thinking that I could go and do this. This is, yeah.
What a great title for a memoir.
I'm going to keep that in mind.
I agree. It's really good. I definitely want to pick that up.
What a naive dumbass I am. So that's what I want. It's not sort of this glorious account of the North because that wasn't my experience. It was humbling and challenging. So it's going to be a multi-year project probably. I'm gearing up to have applied to do my MFA at UBC next year. So provided I get accepted.
You'll find out really soon.
I know.
This is the time.
Yeah. I can't wait.
I can still recall the victory dance I did.
Oh, yeah. We're going to pop
a cork. It was
like
a cool dance.
For sure. We're going to have to pop a couple of corks.
Nobody saw it.
Yeah. Well, because most of the time you get it, whatever, you're in your pajamas.
You're alone, yeah.
Getting your mail. Yeah. So that is, I'm working on that. I think I started off by saying beginning of the month, the documentary premieres in Calgary. None of us have seen it yet, but we've all done quite a bit of work on it. I did a bunch of voiceover for it and recorded some poems and stuff. So we get to go see that.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Kind of is. Yeah.
I watched the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah.
It did make it look super interesting.
Yeah. It's hard to make the writer look interesting.
There's just that scene of you with the majestic North and you're quietly writing in a notebook, right?
Totally ignoring everything.
Like, hey guys, so here's the stereotype of writers.
Yeah. 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 And I think the other scene, I'm just like stuffing my face with food. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Those are both perfect.
Yeah. The visual artists were much more exciting. They were better on camera. They get a better face. They knew how to talk about their art better too. Cause that's the other thing. You tell a writer, what are you working on? And it's like, but you talk to a visual artist and it's like part of the deal that they have to know how to talk about their art. So they're like, I'm just creating a safe space here for people to be. And I just really want to like bring you into that and use some of these like natural dyes here on the, and I mean, they know. So they did well.
And writers are just like, we're alienating everyone.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I learned like
there
an
was
elevator.
A bit of that.
I always learn an elevator pitch for my books just because I get so tired of answering that question. So it's like, I always have like a one sentence go to, and then I just say that. And then I go, it's weird. And then that's it.
I also just a lot of times have a title picked out that I'm like, this is what it's called.
That's pretty
good.
And
then, then you can just sort of let people think whatevs. And then I'm like, hey, have you tried these peanut butter M&Ms? They're so good.
Yeah, distract them.
I have a bowl right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, distract.
It adds to your mystique, too,
totally.
To not offer up too much,
people
right?
And
people want that from us.
People don't know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, this is it. This is all you get.
My writing is so transparent. Yay! Daniel, what about you? What's happening to you?
Oh, so also hungover, but because I was with Dina.
Are you blaming me?
Yeah. I had been sick for like a week, and so I just like had like the taste of liquor on my mouth, and I was like, well, I guess I'm all in. And it was like, I just went for brunch too, and that was where I had the drink. And then a friend was like, well, let's go get a margarita. I'm like, well, you know what? I was just going to go home and like, you know, finish my work because it's Saturday. And instead I had that drink, and then I was like, well, I better like ditch my car and like lean in. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, me, I bought some stuff at CB2, like a professional homosexual, and we drank some more and went
Daniel,
to a drag
two
show.
Stools, Zamparelli. Yeah. Bought two stools.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to an amazing drag show. Our friend Chandelier started a new show called Studio with Shanda that was more...
So much fun.
It was so fun. It was so funny. And it was more like a variety show type. So there was a bunch. It was just really...
Sketches.
Really great. Yeah,
yeah,
sketches.
A little bit of stand-up.
There was sketch. Yeah, and there was also some performances, some drag performances. It was really, really fun.
I had that. So my point of this, the whole story of, you know, being a... hungover mess was I had this like moment of like pure joy, like when I was watching the show, I'm like, this is so much fun. I'm like, I'm hanging out with Dina, and then I was getting texts from my boyfriend at the same time. I'm like, you know, I'm like, I just like was like, I felt so like, I kept thinking like, I feel so charmed right now, like everything is so nice, and this is why I'm not writing and or reading anything right now.
You got to give yourself like, you got to take those moments, don't you?
It was wonderful. I was like, this is great. And I was like, this is why I'm not finishing that book that's potentially going to be due soon. What a great thing. And then I, of course, was like, Dina, we should have one more drink. And then that was a bad idea, because then I woke up this morning like, I did not need that last drink.
Yeah. That's pretty much my plan since I came back, is to just drink my way through all my hellos with everyone. Good to see you again. Yeah, all the housewarmings and stuff. Yeah, so we started last night. We're just going to keep it rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah, you stay with the clear, stay with gin, the clean stuff. I think we had to, we went to the soft, the new Stormcrow stuff
opening. That opened this weekend, the soft opening.
Yeah, and it was kind of, we got in trouble.
Tell us about getting
Why did you get in trouble?
We're so badass. It was completely by accident. We rolled up to the bar and sat down, and I wanted a martini, and my friend wanted a bourbon on the rocks. So we ordered it, and the lovely gent brought it over, and we started to drink. And then the bar manager or someone in charge came over and was like, "Hi, ladies." And this was okay, right? And... so you ordered these drinks, and you know, that's totally fine. And I was thinking, like, where is this going to go? Are you going
to
buy us a drink?
Why are you talking to me like this?
Yeah. What's happening? But this is our soft opening, as you may know. I'm like, I know. Sean Cranberry invited me.
Yeah.
Like,
you got it.
Right?
Name drop Sean Cranberry. That,
right?
At the Stormcrow.
You did the right
and
thing.
I get really uppity when people, I'm like, I'm paying good money here and I don't have a lot of money. So what's going on? And I right away, and Tasha sitting there, she's got her hand on my knee. She's like, okay, Carly, keep it down. Keep it down. And the thing was, I guess, we didn't know. I mean, we just ordered a drink. The soft opening, they wanted people to only order from the menus so that the bar staff would get a chance to just work on the drinks, like the specials. So he's like, it's okay, you know, as if, like, we're not going to take your drinks away from you.
Oh my God.
I was sort of in my
hand.
Drink
something else.
Yeah. But... from here on in, you're going to have to order from the menu.
What a nerd.
And I don't, and that was it. Like, Tash and I read the situation completely differently. I was like, who the fuck was that? Like, and what are you telling me what I can drink and what I can't drink? And Tash was like, no, he was embarrassed. It was clearly he was trying to, but I just felt like I was being, right? And so, and I do normally take her word on it most of the time, because she's almost always right. I'm almost always wrong. So especially once I get some
liquor into
me. He just
sounds like a
me.
Nerd.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
like, it is a nerd bar.
At the nerd bar, right?
I like that the two of you were kind of good cop, bad copping him, even though you were the ones in trouble. But you were both taking on these roles.
Follow-up question to this. Did you go to the ladies' washroom where I think there's no, like, dividers between the toilets?
No. Oh, I didn't visit the ladies.
Because that's no everyone dividers. Keeps Instagramming it, because I think they haven't put up the dividers yet.
Oh, okay. So there
and
will
then
be.
There was a few writers on Facebook last night who took a photo of them all, like,
all
doing
three of them
funny things while on the toilet, like pants down on the toilet, and it was the best.
It's really great. I don't know if it was there or somewhere else, because I think they went somewhere afterwards, but I think it was there.
I think it's there because somebody else tagged them. It's twice I've seen it on Instagram.
All I know is beautiful moment. Really great.
The other thing is, like, the other moment that's being missed is holding hands while you're on the bathroom.
Definitely.
Oh.
Like, there's the photo needed where it's, like, three people sitting on the toilet holding hands. I mean, I can't be a part of it because it's the ladies' room, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. You could be if you know.
If it's gender neutral,
if it was
sure.
also the soft opening,
yeah.
just do whatever you want.
Just soft.
Everyone's yeah. testing it.
Clearly, we threw caution to the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ordering whatever we want.
Yeah, you're being well. Yeah. so bad.
I know. Yeah. Right. No, so that was it. But the other drinks weren't really to my liking. There was this one that had like 9 different kinds of booze in it.
And no,
should have had that one.
Well, I did. Storm Curl's
a great bar. I love it. I go for beer because
they have a great beer list.
They've got a great beer list, mm-hmm. but like that weird nerd cocktail collection is like, no, these are all gross.
Yeah,
like just make a whiskey sour. I'm sorry. Yeah. Call it whatever you want, but make me a whiskey sour or like yeah, dirty martini, yeah. something. Like, name it. I don't care. You can even name it a Star Wars character. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Drink it down.
Stop putting so many liqueurs and things. Yes. It's not, like, 2004.
Yeah.
Wait. Are you sure? But wait. Is it the 80s? Is it, like, cocktail?
If it was the 80s, then I'd be like, yeah.
Oh, my
put
God.
More crazy liquors in it.
Yeah.
Put milk
yeah.
in it, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Stunt
bartending. Throw that around before yeah. you, like, cool. yeah.
Every time I roll, there's that big, I guess it's D&D die.
Oh, yeah.
And you roll it, and you get the shot. Every time I've ever rolled it, always a Boilermaker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but you like Boilermakers.
I do like them, I mean, it combines two things that I like, whiskey and beer.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's like, that's what I'm drinking anyway.
But, yeah.
That's
but
true.
Not at the same time in such like a harsh way. It's like a hard way to drink a shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if you've already been drinking. It's not what you do maybe. Like maybe you start out, you have a Boilermaker, and then you're like, okay, well, now I'm going to ease into, you know, other booze.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Go for it.
No.
So then, Dina, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. This week marked a very important seasonal change for me, which is the time. Usually it's the first week of February when I just stop wanting to get dressed, and I hate all of my cold weather clothes and I want to set them on fire. Like, I just reach a point where I'm like, that's it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being covered up. I can't handle it. I have a tantrum like a child.
Yeah.
Throw a bunch of stuff around. Super mature and appropriate. And then, I mean, obviously I am wearing clothes right now, but I don't like anything. I just scowl at my wardrobe. I feel so ragey towards it. I just, in my mind, my body is ready for my old friends hiding in their Rubbermaid bin.
It's close.
It's getting close. That's why it gets so close. And then I start like really pushing against it. My rage manifests in strange ways, sometimes about things like this that are superficial and really useless, but I really want to focus on it.
Yeah.
But it happens to me every year and I just get fucking mad. Yeah. So that happened this week.
Yeah.
Then I moved on. Then I had to be worried about this crown that I was getting put in.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's cool. I love my dentist. I got to watch Netflix. She's super nice. Hands tiny and nimble. Really good. Yeah. It was like a 2-hour thing just to do the temporary one, but it was good.
Can I tell you something about my dentist?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I was phobic for a long time, like crying in the chair phobic.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I just got so, I've been with this dentist for like 10 years now or something, and he's a lovely person. And eventually I just got tired of being phobic. Like, it was exhausting and the Ativan didn't work and made me weird. And he wouldn't prescribe me anything else for some reason. So I was like, all right, I'm going to have to do this on my own. So I did a fairly good job. And like, he noticed, he was like, hey, look at you, you're killing it in the chair. You're not, last time I went in, I had a surprise extraction. They actually pulled an entire tooth from my mouth.
That's the worst.
He's like, this is broken. How are you in intense pain right now? And I was like, in denial, I guess. But what I noticed that when I stopped being phobic, I started to get kind of sexually attracted
to your dentist.
Yes. Like, he'd be in there with his fingers in my mouth. And I realized, because I'm trying to write a story about it right now, because I realized that it's like double entendre.
It's all of it.
Right? The fingers in the mouth.
Fingers in the mouth. And you're wearing a dental dam so much.
Yeah. And that's a real fetish. Like, that's people actually like that. And the smell, the first thing that I noticed was the smell of latex, which I was like, it smells like condoms. No, it smells like dicks, first of all. And I was like, no, it's not dicks. It's dicks and condoms is what it smells like. It smells like condoms.
That's weird.
And then all I could think about, and I noticed that I was in, and I was sort of feeling like, hey, yeah. And all of a sudden I wanted to kind of impress him. He was like, you're doing really well, Carly. I'm like, I'm doing really well. Oh my God, thanks. And he's just like, sort of, and I just need to say that my dentist has never been anything but 100% professional. And this is like entirely in my head. But I just noticed it's like to go from fear to like Let's get it on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your 50 Shades of Dental.
Dr. Lee.
Or whatever.
His name is not actually Dr. Lee.
Yeah. You guys, not actually you're never going to find him.
Wait, so then what happened with your teeth?
Oh. Everything fine. They're great.
Okay.
You got your crown.
I have my temporary crown in now. Yeah. I knew that I needed to get it done. And then in the fall, thought I was on my deathbed when I was like, Little Women style dying of the flu or whatever was happening.
And
I
tuberculosis.
Yeah. TB.
Yeah.
And I had to cancel all my appointments for everything. And so now I'm like going back, but I knew that I needed to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and the temp will last for a long time.
I'm only going to keep it in for a couple weeks and then they're going to do the permanent. Yeah.
Good for you.
She's going to Australia, my dentist, for a couple weeks. So she's like, this is actually perfect. It'll have time to settle and then we'll put in the rig. You'll be great.
Yeah.
I'll be chomping on so many things. I'll just be biting down when I meet people. Be like, hey, can I bite your arm? And they'll be like, no. And I'll be like, please.
I got a crown.
I just want to test it out. It's my new greeting. Some people don't like hugging, but what about biting?
Yeah.
It's a new nibble. Way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm making a lot of mouth noises this episode.
Yeah. Speaking of mouth noises and chomping, we're really great at transitions here on Can't Lit.
Yeah.
We read some of your work, and we wanted to talk about that for a little bit. Are you going to replenish drinks?
Yes,
Dina's going to replenish drinks. Usually, I guess, one of our things we do is one of us replenishes drinks while we ask questions about your work.
Okay.
So you sent us a chapbook that's coming out. What was the name of the chapbook again?
It's called The Closest We'll Get to Neon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you also sent a short story.
Yes.
And that was...
Moosehide was the one that I sent you, and then I think you guys had a look at
the Joy
Tinder Lines. One, too. Yeah.
Yep. I'm always for Tinder stories.
More Tinder, yeah.
Yeah. And what I wanted to ask, because when I was reading the Moosehide one and the chapbook, and they're quite obviously the same theme and, like... narrative.
Yeah.
And they're both great. I love them a lot. What I wanted to ask is what would make you go to, say, to poetry or fiction, depending on what you want to write about?
Yeah. It was a practical, I don't know if practical is the right word, but it was on the trip. There wasn't a lot of, I'd had this idea about, documenting the days and sort of, I thought I would go and write memoir. I thought I would write memoir.
Yeah.
You were so tired and you were so busy. Like, being a creative person was really sort of the bottom of the list of what you were able to do on the trip. You were a camper and a team member and all this stuff first. So, I very quickly realized that there wasn't, you had to really power your way through the minimal amount of time you had for writing.
Right.
So I had tried, also you're too exhausted to document the day.
Right.
Most of the time. So I started to realize that it was actually one of the visual artists one day just pointed out, she's like, hey, I'm kind of seeing textures and everything today. Like I'm sort of, I'm seeing the rocks, I'm seeing, stuff that I hadn't seen sort of before now. Cause the other thing is that you're just so in your own head and exhausted most of the time that you're really barely observing. And she said that, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, yeah, I'm seeing stuff. And it was a little bit of a more concentrated experience, I guess. And I found that I was more inclined to write about small, concentrated experiences than to try to work out narratives or something like that. It was images, impressions about the day. And, I don't consider myself a poet. I consider myself a writer who writes poetry. But what I found there was that it was...
Poetry phobe.
I know, that's probably like a lame thing that people say all the time. But I don't, like, I can't claim...
Soon you're going to be so horny for poets when you finally just give in.
Yeah, it's true.
I just don't... I'm too narrative focused most of the time. But that's what I ended up writing there. I would pull up my little book and, I would start working on, a series of, you know, images or impressions rather than like, let's tell a story, let's talk about the day or something like that. And also sort of a cool thing was that I didn't have my computer, so everything had to be handwritten, and I have terrible handwriting. It's like barely discernible. Mm-hmm. But I would, so I would write out the poem and just try not to, no questions, just put it down. And then I'd rewrite it over and over and over again in the book. So I ended up with these kind of cool journals where you can see the poem, how it progresses. Right. And there were things like rhythm became really important on the trip because you were paddling all day, right? And you were breathing all day. So things that you would go to sleep in your tent at night and you would still have this feeling of motion in rhythm.
Right.
So I don't know if this sounds douchey or not, but this is what happened on the trip. So
all poetry sounds douchey.
Okay. Yeah. Like, just let it go. Yeah.
Basically you're a poet now. Yeah. You've transitioned.
Okay. So I'm just going to roll with this and say there was a lot of rhythm. It was really important. It was a great way to calm yourself at the end of the day to read your poem and to read it over and over again and to try to get a handle for the rhythm. It was hard to, we were anxious. I was anxious a lot of the time. I was not in a comfortable place. So it made me feel happy. It was also a packaged little thing to share with folks at the end of the night. It was, we'd all be around the fire and I could just say, hey, I'd like to read you guys this poem that I wrote today.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely a poet.
Can I read my poem?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's what you do. That's how you know you're a poet. If you ask other people if they can want to listen to it.
Well, and that, and people were, it was great. Also, I was a real bitch a lot of the time. Like I was a total bitch many, many days.
Were you the bitch of the trip?
I sort of feel like maybe, yeah.
That's okay.
Because I was sort of...
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
most of the people on the trip had this amazing ability to bank stuff. Like, right. I will deal with this later. And I went on, I was like, I'm dealing with this now in the moment. I need to process this as we go, kind of. So if I was having... And I also just assumed that, I got on really well with the Torontonians because they've got a great bubble. The Torontonians are just, and whereas some of the folks from the smaller areas, they just, how you doing, Carly? I'm just having a terrible day. And I would just push it into them and they would be upset. Whereas the Torontonians are like, Carly's just having a moment. And that was it. So, I would say, and I think I was the bitch for sure. And it was just me being me, but me turned out to be a total bitch.
It's fair.
So it was at the end of the day, if I could say, hey, I would like to let you guys know how I appreciate you and how I paid attention. That little thing that you were doing, I noticed that and I put it in a poem and hopefully you'll forgive me because you'll feel like immortalized in my words or something. It was like a little apology at the end of the night.
Okay.
So speaking about sort of your behavior or in terms of the trip, your bitchery, do you think that also there's sort of in terms of your writing process, there's a reactionary element? Like, poems, it sounds like we're coming from experiences that you were having.
Yeah.
Like I know that sometimes when I'm writing, I'm having a reaction to something and it could be whatever. And then I'm just like, get into it. As opposed to, I think some people are like, oh, I've really been thinking about this for like 2 to 4 years and I'm going to finally write some stuff down. Whereas I think there's, you know, a mode of writing where you're reacting to things that are happening through writing.
Yeah.
So is that part of your process, do you think?
Yes, I would definitely agree. And I mean, poems require time. Fiction isn't easier. Poetry isn't easier. Can't say. But I think, a story requires a lot of processing time. And I knew I wasn't. And I mean, that's Moosehide is fiction, set on the Peel, but it's definitely fiction. I read it to a bunch of people in Montreal and they were like, whoa, what kind of a trip were you on? I'm like, no, fiction, guys. I said fiction.
It wasn't like a sex resort.
Yeah.
I did have that moment of reading it. Everyone was like, no, Daniel, don't do that thing. Yeah. Where you go, is this fiction or real life? That does not matter.
There were no...
It just means it was well written. Yeah. Like, you're fine.
Yeah. Okay, good. But the rawness, even though, I mean, in order to make the chapbook happen, I had to go back and normally get hammered and spend a lot of time with those poems. A lot of them changed quite a bit, too, from the time. A couple that I tried to keep for authenticity's sake, I tried to keep, like, yes, I wrote this on the Peel. It barely changed. But that, I would say, for sure, the reacting and the rawness... poetry really served that.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean, whether it's poetry or fiction, it doesn't mean that you're not going to edit it
and
do all of those other processes. But yeah, I think sometimes the most exciting stuff you can write comes from that place.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So you also have actually a lot, you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
As a creative person, it's very cool. Because you are working on, you've got the chapbook. Mm. Is the chapbook coming out?
Yeah, it's, I don't know what to do about this. Cause I feel, I don't know, the guys, the designer is like, I think that I'm being like falsely humble or something like that, but I don't know what to do, but it's part of my, it's a deliverable for the Peel project. Mm-hmm. I said that I would deliver something and, since we're going to Calgary, it'll be available there for people to buy. And, I'll probably do some readings here. And if people want to buy one, they can, but it's not like, I'm not going to lie. It's not, no one's publishing it. I wanted to make a book and so there we go, but I'm not going to pretend like I'm important or something because it's just me.
You're important for so many reasons.
But that's also the point of chapbooks.
Yeah.
To,
like, right.
Yourself.
That's what I sort of thought. Yeah.
And they're just supposed to exist as these beautiful little objects that are from a time and place that you can, Daniel's a chapbook collector, so he knows.
Okay, good. Thanks, guys. Because I hadn't really talked to anyone about it. I was like, I don't know.
No, it's great. No, I think it's great.
People do chapbook. There's chapbook publishers, but those, once again, are just produced by people just being like, I'm a chapbook producer. Like, there's only like one press who does, or two presses who do chapbooks.
Yeah, there's a couple.
And there's no, to me, as somebody who collects chapbooks, and I have like a lot of them, I don't associate a difference between a publisher producing or not. I associate how much effort is put into the whole thing. I care much more about what the whole physical object is and how, like, what effort or thought you've put into what it looks like and what's inside it and what the whole thing means than anything. Yeah. So it's like, there's no faking a chapbook.
Yeah. No.
It's
like
a real
that
deal.
Thanks for schooling me, guys, on that. Yeah. A lot of the time I just jump into this stuff myself. I'm like, okay, let's make this happen. Let's do this now. And I was like, what are you doing here exactly?
That's all we ever do.
Yeah. What do you think this is?
Yeah. Look what's happening.
You think anyone would ever give us like an actual radio show?
Yeah. That's not happening.
They should.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, come on. Be cool.
Mm. Come on, let two idiots do stuff.
Just saying. Somebody should.
Total dough brains. Do something. Yeah. You also, though, have a book of fiction that you're working on, and that's going to be coming out with Anvil Press in spring 2017.
Yes.
Bad Endings, that's the title, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
you excited
super,
slash
super
scared?
Exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Excited slash
Are you
scared.
In editing?
Yeah. No.
Not
it
yet.
Was like, okay, we got this time, that has always been my dream to publish with Anvil Press. Like the day I met Brian years ago, and
Brian and Karen are, first of all, sweethearts.
Oh yeah.
They're so wonderful.
Yeah. We've closed a couple of bars together and stuff too. And they're a lot of fun.
They're really good at that too. They're great. Yeah. They have so many skills.
The Subterranean published my first ever published story. And, I've always felt, obviously you're just immensely grateful for that. But at the same time, when you feel like some people understand your little language or your little thing, it's so gratifying. Mm-hmm. So I had really always wanted to publish with Anvil, and Brian was sort of, when I spoke to him, he's like, look, I know maybe you were hoping for 2016, we don't have a spot until 2017. I was like, dude, I have a feeling I'm going to need until 2017 to that's not going to be a rush.
Yeah.
So I think it's about 10 stories. My short stories are short stories. I don't write 20 pagers or anything like that. And they're pretty clean. But I still feel like I mean, there's so much work to do.
I feel like that also is the way of the short story where you just, because of the length, you want to go over it and over and over and over it.
Yes. Yeah. And language, you can spend that beautiful time with language, and you can really agonize over every little thing as much as you want, sort of. And there's also this sort of, I'm never trying to sort of be obtuse in my stories, but, I love, Raymond Carver's, I'm a big fan of Raymond Carver, and I love it when you finish a story and you're like, huh, Like, you don't really know what you've read, but you have some kind of feeling happening inside you, and you're sort of not sure. It's not like you're mystified, sort of, or like, you know, someone's tried for a surprise ending or something like that. But I love that, where it's just this sort of this feeling that you're left with, and maybe you have to read it again, or you want to read it again, hopefully, to kind of decode what's happening. And that, I don't know, I hope that there's at least a couple in there that have that.
I'm sure there are.
I hope so.
Well, yeah. I feel like the Tinder story.
I agree.
Did
the Tinder story for sure.
Up on Joyland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It definitely did that. Because you're
the,
like.
What's the title of that one?
What is the title of that one? Oh, The Modern Intimate.
Thank you. Okay. Modern Intimate. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely was at a point where you're like, something concluded, but not exactly.
Yeah.
There was like a loop that was created that mentally you're like, okay, this character, both characters are going. Have certain psychological responses to dating, and it's going to repeat again. And Tinder's just now creating a new way to loop faster.
Yes, which is exactly what I feel about Tinder. Yeah. I'm all for people sharing their stories or horror stories or whatever, but I have nothing horrific to say about, I mean, I Tindered for a little bit and I've got nothing horrific to say about it. What I found was that it was a really fast track into the way that people are handling dating right now. It was just right to that, basically all the bullshit removed. And so I found that fascinating. And I mean, I'd like to write essays about it if I could, because I just,
you can, and you will.
Right?
And I feel you will.
Yeah. I kind of have some notes working towards
that.
Yeah,
of course you do. Yeah.
We got to try to finish some shit, like, before we move to the next shit.
You're our kindred, because you do all the things we do. Write a million things at one time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have projects that you start out of nowhere.
Yeah.
These are really important things that we all need, just the three people in this room as artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so is there a lot within the collection sort of revolving around that element?
Yeah, it is
about intimacy and
stuff,
relationships, people doing stuff.
Yeah,
to each other, with each other,
ending badly.
Yeah,
that's like the first. I mean, it's not chronologically, but ordered. But the first couple of stories that I wrote were about the end of my marriage. And again, like, I write fiction, but I basically write fiction to provide sort of like a comfortable blanket around the fact that I'm just always writing about myself over and over again, sort of. So, it's my characters, the other characters in my stories are usually conglomerates of several people that I've known. But, the first couple of stories that I wrote, War of Attrition, and I think Joyland that's in Joyland as well. It was about the end of my marriage, and when something that big ends in your life, that is like all you write about, I think, or well, for me, over and over and over again, because you just want to look at it from like a million different perspectives. And so that kind of kicked things off. And then it was just, I started to notice like relationships ending. I don't write a lot about death. I think there's maybe a couple of death stories in there too, but I think
in any short story collection, someone's always,
there's going
to
be some death.
Someone has to die
in
order for that collection to be written.
I think both of ours definitely involves that, right?
Yeah, there are.
I got one.
I don't think anyone. Oh no, there are dead people and there's a dying person in mine.
Yeah. You got to have some death and people not handling things right. I really love awkwardness. Like life as
Big
well.
Head.
As.
Oh, me
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. I know it's gotten to the point now where like something awkward happens and you're really, you're like, okay, this is really brutal right now, but later this is going to be awesome.
But you also worked in retail. And I find, as someone who worked in retail and still does for a very long time, you just, things just roll off you in a way that you're like, oh yeah, this is so weird. I'm just going to lean into how weird this is and just let it kind of bounce off me, and you can for sure use those experiences later.
Oh yeah.
And it's so great.
Yeah.
But I just love that. I know lots of people who work in retail too, who just, they can't do that. They're like super mad immediately. I'm like, you can't change this. Just enjoy it.
Yes.
It's super weird.
Yeah.
Just let it happen to you. It's great.
Yes. Yeah. Totally agreed. Yeah.
Kills me.
Yeah.
So funny. I have, I'm going to change topic.
Okay.
All right.
But you also, in our communication, I just kind of wanted to know, cause I knew you were working on a lot of projects. So I just wanted to be able to have some information about stuff that we could look into. And, in your email, a phrase that came up several times was, colonial jerk stuff,
Oh, colonial
which I think is a great term.
Yeah.
First off, and people always want to really like, as opposed to romanticizing, they want to academicize things. No, colonial jerk stuff.
Colonial jerk like, stuff. Don't, yeah.
Don't get too into wanting to name it.
Yeah.
Make it sound like you're so smart. No. But yeah, so you've got a lot of going on colonial jerk stuff, including a panel that you're going to be. Is it a panel or is it a piece of the conference?
Yeah, it's a panel.
Canadian. Yeah, it is a panel. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a Canadian creative writing and.
CWP.
Oh, yeah. Geez. Yeah.
Should
no, I think you wrote it down.
Yeah.
Canadian Creative Writers and Writing Programs.
Oh, yeah.
Canadian Creative Writers and Writing Programs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have a conference every year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this year you proposed. Something.
I did.
Cool.
Because I sort of thought at a certain point, a person, I am all about this, that the academic stuff makes my head spin. Like, I follow a lot of Métis PhD students and PhDs on Twitter because I feel like I should. And the arguments they get into really, it's so hard. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who's, I mean, the politically correct thing makes everything even that much more confusing. Who has the right to be... To call themselves whatever. So I don't know how to function in that realm. And but I knew after I got off the peel that at a certain point I want to contribute. I don't want to just write stories about it. So White People Listening is what the panel is called. And it's because it sort of came out of, well, among many things, on the peel, we basically had our asses hauled off the river and we were fed by some locals. And they really, I mean, the situation wasn't dire, but the situation was poor. Right. And after meeting these guys and having like them take on 12 uninvited guests, without a second thought, because that's just kind of how river culture works, we were all pretty humbled.
Oh, we never really explained, but you were in the Peel watershed.
Yes, doing this big canoe trip.
Doing this big canoe trip. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you can pick up on it, but I just wanted to...
Yeah.
That gives a better context, probably.
Sorry, I apologize. I should have jumped in earlier.
Yeah. So whilst we were canoeing, we were running low on food. We were cold. We were uncomfortable. And when we met the Vitriquois, and they really, I mean, we had run out of coffee.
Just take a moment to think about that.
We had run out of coffee.
Cannibalism was next.
Yeah. Seriously,
like,
right?
Things were dire.
Yeah. No, I had been miserable 4 days. So, and they sent us off with coffee. And anyways, we were all pretty humbled. And I think at that point, a lot of us realized how naive we were, the whole concept of, you know, finding yourself or whatever, how silly that was. So,
but
I got
a metaphorical journey part.
Yeah. That like, what the hell? I don't know. I'm going to forgive myself for that, but that was stupid. And I was the oldest on the trip. Anyways, forgive myself. So I knew that eventually I was like, I'm not just going to write stories about this. I want to contribute. But what do I know? Cause that's really important. I don't want to sell, I really don't want to sell myself as something I'm not. So what am I? Well, I'm a dumbass who has made a lot of mistakes trying to be an ally. I am Métis, but we're talking like a drop of blood in the big quantum, right? Like we're talking generations ago. And I want to know about my ancestors. I want to write about it. I want to, it's something that I want to access, but I can't pretend to be some kind of wise woman or something like that. But what I can talk about is being an idiot, basically, like making a lot of mistakes. And what I see is other folk making mistakes in their excitement to be an ally to the cause. Like, how many times do you hear, do you know what you people should do?
Oh my God.
And it's really like, well-meaning, right? Do you know what you people should do? Like, do you know what you people need to do? People have said it to me. They're like, okay, you've identified yourself as somewhat of a mixed blood. So do you know what you people really need to do? You people really need to get together.
Also telling you is going to be super helpful because you're just then going to
implement that across
the board.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
I'm on the committee.
Yeah. You put it in your Facebook group page. Yeah. You go, this is so like cool. I said, you know what we should do.
We're all on it. Anyways, back to the Peel trip. What I noticed there is that I was there with my buddies who were really, really eager to chat with the Vitriquois and learn from them. And, different people communicate in different ways. sort of a generalization, but I think it may be fair, is that elders, and when you're in an oral tradition and a storytelling tradition, it behooves you, the listener, to essentially shut up and listen. And we, as someone, me, who fills all the sentences with nervous, or all of the blank spaces with nervous chatter, naturally, I understand that it can be really difficult to just sit and listen. Because also sometimes when someone's talking to you, they stop.
Because they're thinking.
Yeah. And they look at you and they gather it up. Or you ask a question and there's a long pause before the answer comes out. And some people panic in that moment and sort of like, oh, okay, I need to say more. And I sort of noticed that, okay, I'm not an expert in the situation, but maybe I know a little bit more than some of my fellow travelers about the importance of listening. And at a certain point, when I got to chat with Ernest and Alice Vitrecroix, I was a bit of a douche, but I kind of tried to set an example. And people noticed that when Ernest or Alice was speaking to me, I would just nod. And when the silences came, I just kind of let them happen. Because I happen to know enough to know that this is the best way to get a story out of someone, is to just listen. So this isn't rocket science that I'm talking about here. There's nothing, we're not going to get there and teach people some sort of like new revolutionary way. It's more like a gentle reminder that there are different ways to listen to people, and that how important that is. One of the guys on the panel, my friend Nathan Med, is I don't know exactly what his title is, but he's like a big time producer in Canadian theater. And they did a weekend, I think it was a weekend, where it was kind of like there were the artists, the First Nations artists, and there was the money, the producers. And the money ended up being mostly white people. And they were invited to attend and listen for 2 out of the 3 days. They were not invited to speak. And in a nutshell, I don't want to, he's going to be on this panel, and I'm so stoked that he's going to tell this story. The non-Indigenous people went through quite a lot of pain and annoyance, some of them, at not being able to speak for 2 out of the 3 days, right? And just listen and be told what things were, and you know, be told how people saw things. And sometimes it's because they wanted to offer up useful advice, right? And other times it was defensive. They wanted to defend themselves. And then on the third day, the non-Indigenous people were invited to speak. And from the sounds of the way he tells the story, most people were really, like the level of conversation that happened at the end of this was really, really high level and really quality. And I feel like it's hard to get that story out. He asked me to write about it, and I pitched it to the papers and stuff, and nobody wants to write about Canadian theater. Like, nobody wants your story about Canadian theater. And that really pisses me off.
Also very upsetting.
Yeah. And I don't know.
Fuck that shit.
Yeah. We don't care. And it's Indigenous Canadian theater. We're even less interested. Right. But
so uncool.
Yeah.
No one likes that. It's not on trend, guys. No.
So in a way, I built this panel kind of because I want Nathan to be able to tell. I mean, I'm going to be able to like, hey guys, maybe this is how you listen. But Nathan's story, I feel, is going to be
it sounds great. And also I just love the idea that people in general have to listen without being able to, because obviously we live in talking earlier about reactionary stuff, mm-hmm. in terms of writing is one thing, but being reactionary just immediately, and like the amount of hate speech people could just tweet at anyone in an instant, to be able to not have that be a part of a dialogue is fucking great.
Yeah.
So that's really great. It sounds awesome. And when's that happening?
In June.
June. Okay.
Yeah.
Beginning, end of June?
June, was it 15th to 18th? We're going to be there. And Janina Curtin is on the...
Nice.
So great.
Yeah. Another Talon Books alumni. Yeah.
Yay.
She's going to be there. And I love her because we're both Métis and Icelandic. That's our background. And there's not a lot of us out there.
Great.
Yeah. And that's, we actually met because someone told me that she was Métis, and I was totally hammered we were at some sort of opening, and I was like, hey, I'm Métis and Icelandic too. Let's hang out. She was very polite.
Yeah.
And then later when
she's lovely. Yeah. She's so lovely.
But she's also so badass. That's the thing, right?
She's awesome.
And she got it when I started to talk about the idea for the panel. She was like, I get this. I'm
very,
like, I want you on
very
this panel.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So we've told you about all the things Carly is doing. You can check out thepeel.ca to find out more about the Peel Project. Next year, we'll be able to buy her book, Bad Endings, from Anvil Press.
Yeah.
Her chapbook will sort of be available. Just keep tabs on that.
Yeah. How can we keep tabs on that?
My website, carlybaker.com.
There we go.
I'll put something up there.
Yeah, perfect.
And you're also, where else can we find you online? You're on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah. Carly Baker. That's, I have an actual writer's Facebook page now because all of the like personal stuff on my Carly Baker Facebook page was getting a little embarrassing. So if we're buddies, I urge you to friend me on Facebook. And if, you know, maybe we're, you know, just sort of, like working relationship
or maybe
people.
You just listen to this and now you're kind of into her and that like dentist way, yeah. But you don't be creepy about it. Just don't like her just, author
yeah.
page.
Yeah. No creepy. Yeah.
Don't be
yeah.
a weird yeah. piece of shit. I'll come find you.
I don't want to date you.
That's a summary of every episode
where I'm just like, oh, are you a dude that's being a creep? I'm gonna come get you. Yeah. I don't like it.
Don't do it. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I really liked your poem.
No.
A tiny ghost comes out of my butt and it goes and attacks people. Yeah. Like
your Casper farts.
It's like a little Casper fart. Yeah. Okay. So people can find you online. Mm. Your work is out there. Daniel, do you want to tell us where you can find Cantlit?
You can find Cantlit at cantlit.ca and on iTunes and Stitcher and
on Twitter.
That's the other thing.
And Facebook.
Facebook. Right.
And if,
but most importantly, just go on iTunes and Stitcher, like subscribe,
please give fave,
us, like,
give us some, ratings. We haven't had ratings in a while.
It's been a while.
Give us some 5 stars. You know what? Even if you didn't like it that much, how about just 4?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Or 4. Like if you hate us, 1.
Just give us a 1. And then you. I would love to have a really mean review if you don't like this podcast, but you're somehow still hate listening. I really want to hear about that.
We're here for our hate listeners.
We're here for the love guys. And the hate. Yeah. Carly's contributing.
Yeah.
We only have 1 question left for you, Carly. Okay. And that is, what can't you with?
Yeah, I can't. Solitude.
Oh, yeah. I love the footage.
Fuck that.
Yes. Finally, people are on my side.
Extroversion all the way.
Extroversion. Yay. Yeah.
Not ordering from the menu at bars.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. We're going to do that everywhere now. Yeah.
No. I'm going to be. Yeah. It's like when you go to a restaurant, you have a bunch of specific things that you can't eat, but instead just be like, I can't have creme de menthe. I'm allergic to it. And just like say you're allergic to a bunch of weird liqueurs.
Yeah.
I'm absinthe intolerant.
Yeah.
My best friend, actually, my other best friend, that's not Daniel, is allergic to maraschino cherries.
Oh, those things.
Roxanne, can't
have
allergic
them.
To?
Yeah. Roxanne cannot have maraschino cherries. Her face gets super
She
weird.
Is a maraschino cherry, though.
She's a little maraschino.
She's sweet and
so juicy and sweet. Ew, gross. Okay, thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.